Hello, welcome to another moment with Eric Fleming. I am your host, Eric Fleming. And now, a word from the President of the United States.
Before I leave for California, I want to briefly speak about what's happening in Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. Today, thanks to the quick action of my administration over the past few days, Americans can have confidence that the banking system is safe. Your deposits will be there when you need them. Small businesses across the country, the deposit accounts at these banks can breathe easier knowing they'll be able to pay their workers and pay their bills. And their hardworking employees can breathe easier as well. Last week, when we learned of the problems of the banks and the impact they could have on jobs, some small businesses and banking system overall, I instructed my team to act quickly to protect these interests. They've done that. On Friday, the government regulator in charge, the FDIC, took control of Silicon Valley Bank's assets. And over the weekend, it took control of Signature Bank's assets. Treasury Secretary Yellen and a team of banking regulators have taken action, immediate action. And here are the highlights. First, all customers who had deposits in these banks can rest assured, they'll be protected and they'll have access to their money as of today. That includes small businesses across the country that bank there and need to make payroll, pay their bills, and stay open for business. No losses will be, and I want, this is an important point, no losses will be borne by the taxpayers. Let me repeat that. No losses will be borne by the taxpayers. Instead, the money will come from the fees that banks pay into the deposit insurance fund. Because of the actions of that, because of the actions that our regulators have already taken, every American should feel confident that their deposits will be there if and when they need them. Second, the management of these banks will be fired. If the bank is taken over by FDIC, the people running the bank should not work there anymore. Third, investors in the banks will not be protected. They knowingly took a risk, and when the risk didn't pay off, investors lose their money. That's how capitalism works. And fourth, there are important questions of how these banks got into the circumstance in the first place. We must get the full accounting of what happened and why those responsible can be held accountable. In my administration, no one is above the law. And finally, we must reduce the risk of this happening again. During the Obama-Biden administration, we put in place tough requirements on banks like Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, including the Dodd-Frank law to make sure that the crisis we saw in 2008 would not happen again. Unfortunately, the last administration rolled back some of these requirements. I'm going to ask Congress and the banking regulators to strengthen the rules for banks to make it less likely this kind of bank failure would happen again, and to protect American jobs and small businesses. Look, the bottom line is this. Americans can rest assured that our banking system is safe. Your deposits are safe. Let me also assure you, we will not stop at this. We'll do whatever is needed. On top of all that, let's also take a look at a moment to put the situation in a broader context. We've made strong economic progress in the past 2 years. We've created more than 12 million new jobs, more jobs in 2 years than any president has ever created in a single four-year term. Unemployment is below 4% for 14 straight months. Take-home pay for workers is going up, especially for lower and middle-income workers. And we've seen record numbers of people apply to start new businesses, more than 10 million of them, more than 10 million applications over the last 2 years starting businesses. Now we need to keep the program, this progress going. That's what swift action that my administration over the past few years is all about, protecting depositors, protecting the banking system, protecting the economic gains we've made together for the American people. Thank you. God bless you. And may God protect our troops. See you in California.
Mr. President, what do you know right now about why?
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the President of the United States addressing the issue that has just happened over the weekend with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. Those two banks have basically been closed because of mismanagement of their risk. So Silicon Valley Bank was primarily a bank. If you had a tech startup, that was the bank you wanted to go to for loans and maintain your assets, right? Or at least part of the assets. A lot of people, ordinary people, didn't bank at Silicon Valley Bank. However, enough of them did where they withdrew $42 billion. Now, the Silicon Valley Bank closing is the largest, second largest bank closure or forfeiture, whatever, in American history behind Washington Mutual. Y'all remember the WaMu commercials and all that stuff, and then 2008, poof, they were gone. That was like $300 billion gone. This one is $209 billion, right? But you heard the president say that everybody is going to be covered. So most of us have seen that little sticker on the teller's window when you go into the bank, if they still have them up now. A lot of banks don't. They might have a little placard or something. It basically has the initials FDIC, Federal Depositors Insurance Corporation. That is the agency that's supposed to protect your accounts. And for a number of years, if you had up to $100,000 in the bank, you would be guaranteed that your money would be covered. And that falls under most Americans. Most Americans probably have less than $100,000 in a banking or a savings account. After the banking crisis in 2008 started with WaMu and Lehman Brothers and all that, they jacked it up to $250,000. So if you had up to $250,000 in the bank, it was guaranteed you would be able to recoup all your money and, you know, put in another bank. Well, this exception is that whatever you had in the bank at Silicon Valley Bank or Signature Bank, whatever you had, you will be able to get all of your money, even if it's over $250,000. So for the average person, that's a relief. But for companies like Roku, companies like Venmo, companies like Etsy, it's a big relief. Now, Roku is probably, and for those of you who are not familiar, Roku is the little device that you stick on your TV so you can stream, right? You can pick them up at Walmart or wherever. About close to 30% of their assets was in Silicon Valley Bank. So those people are breathing a huge sigh of relief that their money is going to be covered. But, you know, for average citizens, so average citizens started getting wind of it, I guess, you know, friends pay attention to the markets, we're getting wind of this. And they use a term in finance, which is similar to a term in health called contagion. And usually what happens when they say contagion, it means if one of these small banks closes, then several of them will close. And so far, it's only been one other, and that was Signature. Everybody else seems to be okay. And when you talk about small banks, we're not talking about Bank of America. We're not talking about Chase. You know, Bank of America. Who else? Wells Fargo. Yeah, we're not talking about those banks. We're talking about like Regions or Five Thirds or something along that nature. Everything is cool with those banks. PNC, all of everything is cool with them. You don't have to pull your money out. You don't have to stick it in a mattress. You're good. The banks that I am concerned about are Greenwood, Citizens Trust, and a few other banks. Those are black banks. And they definitely fall under that small bank category, despite the efforts of investors and activists to get more black people to invest in those banks. They're not big banks. First American, you know, those banks. I don't even know if First American is still around. I'll just be honest. Somebody might have bought them out by now. But yeah, those small banks were the ones when something like this happens, people start getting fidgety and panicking. And so the reason why I wanted to start off the podcast with that timely news story is for us to deal with, and this show is really about fears and misconceptions. And the second half of the show, we'll get into even more why I wanted to theme it this way. But because of this crisis, this is a perfect example of a fear and a misconception, right? Because if you have a misconception, then you're going to be afraid. And so the misconception with people is that when their bank is closing, they're thinking that everybody's bank is closing, right? Now, in 2008, that was real. And if it wasn't for the bailout with the Obama administration and with the Bush administration, because really it was the Bush administration that orchestrated the bank bailout. The Obama administration did the auto industry. But during the Obama administration, you heard President Biden mention Dodd-Frank, right? And I'll get into that in a minute. But there's a misconception out there. And then, of course, you know, everybody has heard, because very few of us were alive during the Great Depression, when the stock market crashed in 29 and everything went to hell in a handbasket for a decade, basically. Or, you know, during Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration, got us out of that. And then World War II, of course, helped us become a power industrially and financially and militarily after that. So it was an incredible turnaround from 1921 to 1945. Anyway, the misconception because of what happened in 08, you know, people are leery. So if their bank is closing, they're trying to get their money. Never mind the FDIC. That they'll be able to get their money out. They're trying to get the money out before the bank is closed, right? So, you know, and it's understandable because people work hard for their money and they want to make sure that they can have access to it. They don't want to lose it because the bank screwed up, right? So I get it. But in situations like this, you need to pay attention to your leadership, your elected leadership, because it is their job to make sure that, especially at the federal level, that your money is safe. And I felt that it was a service if some of you had not heard the president's comments today, as this episode is being recorded, then you needed to hear it. And if you bank at Signature Bank or Silicon Valley Bank, you're good. Well, you got to find another bank, but as far as the actual money, you're good, right? So this is why I wanted to talk about a couple of things. In America, we are about capitalism. There are some people who are about greed. It is our right to make as much money as you can in capitalism. But there's always a problem, not just for you, but for others, when people engage in greed. And a lot of the problems that we have in the United States, as far as anything goes, we got to do what we got to do, whether it's crime, whether it's, and most greed is associated with crime, right? Or crime is mostly associated with greed. Either way, they are simpatico in a capitalist society. You know, but there are people who want to be able to do whatever they want to do, get as much money as they can, legally or illegally, ethically or unethically, and just have it all. And these are the people that show up to Congress and try to convince the federal government not to regulate them. If you've heard this term laissez-faire, and some of you may remember this from college economics or even in high school when talking about the establishment of the country, one of the big debates was whether the American economic system was going to be a laissez-faire capitalistic system, meaning that the government would have no say-so in what businesses do. Laissez-faire is French for hands-off or something like that. And so there's always been this battle since the beginning of the nation to determine what level government should play in business, especially when it comes to banking, right? So you can go back to Supreme Court cases, you know, that even determine whether we should have a Federal Reserve or not, right? Should banks have to charter with the federal government? Because a lot of banks wanted to charter within their states. And a lot of our founding fathers or major players in the development of the nation also were owners of banks. They created banks, right? The guy who shot Aaron Burr created a bank, which is now part of Chase. They eventually got bought in Chase, the Manhattan part of Chase, right? So there's always been this back and forth. And so after 2008, the federal government came up with this law called Dodd-Frank, Christopher Dodd from Connecticut in the Senate and Barney Frank from Massachusetts in the House, co-sponsored a bill to create regulations for these banks to make sure that what happened that led to the bubble busting, as far as these out of control predatory loans and all this stuff, crazy fees, all that, they got that law passed and signed because it was the Obama administration. Well, the Trump administration came in and basically cut the teeth out of Dodd-Frank, or at least eased some of the regulations. Without turning this into a total finance show, we won't get into a whole lot of details, but just understand that elections have consequences. So I'm betting that there are people that are trying or you know, if they hadn't gotten it out yet, we're trying to make sure they didn't get their money out of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. They voted for Donald Trump. And they buy into this concept that government shouldn't be all up in the grill of business. Right? Well, you know, this is what you get when you buy into that. Because when you ease regulations and you allow banks to play with people's money and take risks that they probably shouldn't normally take, despite the immediate gain they might get from it, things like this happen. Now, as the president said, if you invested in Silicon Valley Bank or Signature Bank, oh well. Investment is gambling. In a nice, more secure sort of way, more secure than actually gambling, I guess. But it's gambling. And it's like, you know, you take a chance that this company's going to make it. And if it doesn't, you lost your investment. It happens every day. You know, whether you're a small business, you know, a small restaurant trying to make it, or you're a bank like Silicon Valley. It happens every day. And people invest, whether it's in the stock market or it's personal through loans, whatever, people invest in that business. And some make it and some don't. We get that part. That's, again, capitalism 101. But there should be guidelines that minimize the risk as much as possible, especially when it comes to banks, because we want people, you, me, everybody else, we want everybody to put money in a bank. We do. That's the easiest way. Especially if you have a savings account, that's the easiest way to try to make some money. Because in a savings account, you can generate interest. Now, the interest is really, really low compared to taking a chance on the stock market or day trading or forex trading, whatever you want to call it, and crypto and all this other stuff. But if you keep your money in a savings account and don't mess with it, you'll get interest off of that. You'll have to report it on your taxes, but you'll get interest. It's the safety of a savings account in a bank. If you invest in the stock market for the long term and you're not trying to buy, sell, just trying to, you know, get the instant money out of it, it's a pretty safe investment in the long term. Especially when you invest in companies that have stood the test of time. But if you don't have the government making sure that the playing field is relatively even and safe, then situations like this are going to happen more frequently than they should. And that's where this contagion fear kicks in, right? So Donald Trump and his administration cut back Dodd-Frank. Because of the cutback, it allowed Silicon Valley to take some risks that they wouldn't have been allowed to take under that law. And they paid for it. More importantly, the people who had accounts with Silicon Valley paid for it. Because I don't know if, not unless they did something illegal, nothing's going to happen to those people that made those bad decisions. They'll land jobs somewhere else in the financial industry. You know, it is what it is. Because you heard the president say all of them are fired. They're gone. Because the government has taken over the bank. but they'll land somewhere else because that's kind of the nature, right? You know, their misses are almost equivalent to like baseball. You know, if you miss a lot, oh well, it's money. It's not really our money. It's other people's money, and who cares, right? And so they land on their feet somewhere else. The boy that had the crypto, FTX, he went from being a billionaire to a thousandaire, right? He may face some criminal charges, and then he may not. In the United States, he may not. I think in the Bahamas, he's facing some charges. But here, they still trying to figure out what went wrong. And if he beats the charges in the Bahamas and there's no charges here in the United States, well, oh well. Never mind the reputations of Steph Curry and Tom Brady and all the other folks that he got to do commercials for FTX. He's all right. He just took a risk and he lost. So, again, elections have consequences. And you need to pay attention to arguments, no matter how mundane it may sound. Because a lot of people are like, Dodd-Frank, what does that mean to me? That's a weird sounding name for a bill anyway. Why should I care? Well, this weekend, if you invested in the Silicon Valley, you had accounts at Silicon Valley Signature Bank, it means a lot. And if you've invested in other banks that are not Wells Fargo, Chase, or Bank of America, U.S. Bank, if you're not in one of those, you might want to pay attention to Dodd-Frank. You might want to pay attention to the repercussions of people when they say that they're for something or against something. Because I don't want any of you having to have that fear or that misconception that your money's going to be gone. Right? Which, in closing out, let me just say this about the black banks. And it's a wish, it's a pipe dream for me. But I really would like, for once, for black people to look at a big picture and consider pooling our resources. I think it's our right to create banks. I think it's awesome that we can create a bank like Greenwood or Citizens Trust. And be even more awesome if we had a bank that at least could be at the level of PNC and Regions. But as long as everybody wants to do their own thing and not trust anybody else, primarily because they're black, we're not going to get there. And, you know, when we had this crisis in 08, it was an opportunity. Now, there are some people that argue that some of these banks that have been created lately wouldn't have been created if Dodd-Frank had been maintained. You can make a valid argument that one way to, excuse me, valid argument for that one way or the other. But I would think that if you know the rules of the game, you could structure the bank to make it work within the rules of the game and not wait for a loophole to be created so you can get into the game, right? I think it's time for us to really look at consolidating. And, you know, we talk about in the United States, we frown on monopolies and all that. Well, we wouldn't be a monopoly because they're our other major banks. But it would be nice if we considered pooling our resources to have one major bank that Black people can invest in, put their money in, and then in return be able to get loans for housing, loans for business. Because I heard a comedian the other day say they were talking about COVID and how initially they were saying that Black people weren't catching COVID because of our melanin and all that stuff. I don't know if y'all remember all that. But she said the only thing that Black people can't get is a loan, right? But if we had a Black bank big enough, secure enough, stable enough to make sure that we could get loans for businesses, that we could get loans for houses, that would be a major, major achievement for us as a people. And, you know, some people might say, well, Fleming, you know, it might not be the right time to talk about it. I think it's the perfect time to talk about it. I think it's the perfect time for us to be paying attention to how these crises are happening and how we can take advantage of it and galvanize ourselves so that the 53 million of us that exist in the United States be okay. Just a thought. Catch y'all on the other side. All right, and we are back. And so just something to, I guess, housekeeping or whatever you want to do it before I get into continuing where I'm going with this fear and misconception stuff. The ad you hear that I do to promote Anchor, the service that I do my podcast through, I have to probably change that because now Anchor is now called Spotify for Podcasters. Spotify bought Anchor a little more than a year ago. And so, of course, during that process, you know, there's transition and all that. So now it is no longer called Anchor. It's called Spotify for Podcasters. There's regular Spotify where you can hear podcasts, but now there's Spotify for Podcasters if you want to create your own podcast like what I'm doing now. So that ad's probably going to run for a little bit until get in and change it. Just so you know, that's a change that has happened, that I'm not on Anchor anymore. I'm on Spotify for Podcasters. Anyway. So, and of course, you've been following and know that I've been added into iHeartRadio late last year. You could listen to the podcasts on Amazon Music. You know, the opportunities to listen to podcasts is growing, and I am really, really grateful for that and grateful for all of you all. All right, now that I got that housekeeping out of the way, let's get back into fears and misconceptions, right? And the main reason why I wanted to do this show is because of something that I saw on Jemele Hill's Twitter feed. It was either Twitter or Instagram. One of the two, may have been on both, but I think it was Instagram where I saw it, now that I think about it. And it was a poll done by YouGov America. And it basically was just asking Americans what proportion of the population you think something is. Could be a state, could be how many people, how many households make over $100,000, you know, whatever. And then they compared it to what the actual number was, right? So, for example, one that was relatively close. 38 people believe that 38% of Americans have a household income of over $100,000. The actual number is 34%. So people were kind of on the mark with that one, right? But here's one where they were way off, right? So people believe that 36% of workers in the United States are affiliated with a union. 36. The actual number is 4. Only 4% of Americans are members of a union. 4. And, you know, and these unions still have power politically and all this stuff, but if they were at 36%, I don't know if a Republican would ever win an election. I'm just saying. 36% is what people perceive, but the actual number is 4. So people were way off on that one, right? One that's near and dear to me, I'm left-handed. So people believe that 34% of Americans are left-handed. Basically, they believe a third of Americans are left-handed. The actual number is 11. Only 11% of us exist in the United States. It's amazing. Only 11. And if you notice, though, a lot of the people, I haven't really watched Biden. I think he's right-handed. But Bush, Obama, a lot of presidents have been left-handed. Interesting tidbit. But only 11% of us actually write left-handed in the United States. People think that 33% of Americans are atheists. They think a third of America doesn't believe in God. The actual number is 3. Only 3% of the United States identifies themselves as atheists, people that don't believe that a God exists. 3. People believe that 27% of the American population is Native American. You know, I guess a lot of those people go to those casinos that are in Seminole Casino or Dancing Rabbit in Mississippi, whatever. The actual number is 1%. 1% of the nation are Native American or Indigenous people. 1. It's a sad number for a lot of reasons, but 1. Americans believe that 20% of Americans, 20% of the country, 20% of, there's 20%, how can I say this? Americans believe that of the household incomes over $1 million, 20% of the households in America make over $1 million a year. 20. The actual number is less than 1%. Less than 1. So y'all have been fooled with all these Instagrams and TikToks and all this stuff, these people doing all these amazing things and all that. Yeah. Less than 1% of the population has a household that makes over, of the households in America, less than 1% make over $1 million a year. Americans believe that 26% of household incomes are over $500,000. And the actual number is 1%. Give or take. 1%. Right? So, you know, and then there's some other ones. And I don't know how people figure this out. It's like city and state populations are like public knowledge. Americans are bad with math. Case in point. People believe that 30% of the American population lives in New York City. New York City has 10 million people. Therefore, it's 3%. The United States is 330 million people. So New York makes up 10% of... No, 3%. Sorry, 3% of the American population. Three. So, you know, they believe 30% of Americans live in Texas and 32% live in California, when the actual number is 9% of the nation's population lives in Texas and 12% of the nation's population lives in California. And California is the largest state. 12%. So Fleming, why are you going through all this? Well, let's deal with some issues, right? Let's deal with some issues that hit home. People believe that 51% of Americans are Democrats when the actual number is 42. People believe that 54% of Americans own guns. The actual percentage is 32. People believe that 27% of the nation is Muslim. It's 1%. People believe that 21% of the population is transgender. It's 1%. People believe that 30% of the American population is gay or lesbian. It's only 3%. People believe that 30% of the American population is Jewish. It's only 2%. People believe that 39% of America is Hispanic. It's only 17%. People believe 41% of the nation is black. Don't I wish? 41%. The actual number is 12%. Can you see where I'm going with this, right? So people, especially one particular political party, has been trying to make an issue about black people, been trying to make an issue about people that identify as transgender, people that identify as being gay or lesbian. And it's based off of these misconceptions. You know, America is diverse, and America is that salad that Jane Elliott talks about. But the numbers don't justify the misconception, and the misconception leads to fear. And so because of the fear, that's why we have somebody who thinks they can be president of these United States running on an agenda saying, I'm not woke. I mean, just the concept of that, I'm not woke. I'm asleep. And everybody else should be asleep too. Because that way we can put all these restrictions on these real minorities of people. Right? We want to make sure that 12% of the population doesn't vote. Because in our mind, we really think it's 41% of the population. Right? We want to make it hard for them to vote because Democrats win when they vote. So we got to shut them down. But you're really only shutting down 12% of the population. Right? I know because Obama won, you thought, oh boy, there's a lot of black folks out here. Really not. Barack Obama got a lot of white folks to vote for him. I know it's still hard for a lot of people to believe, right? But then that also explains the Muslim thing, because a lot of people in America still think, for some odd, stupid reason, that Barack Obama was a Muslim. So if you're thinking, well, 27% of the nation is Muslim, well, there you go. That's why he won. No, it's only 1% of the nation is Muslim. So even if he was, he didn't have a big base to work from. He had a bigger base because he's black or identified as black than he would saying, I'm a Muslim. 12% to 1%, better starting point. Still not close to a majority, but there you go. All right. When we talked about the atheists, right, only 3%. You know, all America is this. We were established by God, and we need to keep all these religious beliefs and incorporate all that. That's a good selling point for the evangelicals. But the facts don't bear it out. Majority of Americans believe in God. They just don't worship God or misuse the Bible like you do for political reasons. Right? Obviously, an overwhelming majority, 97%. If 3% don't believe in God, then 97% believe there is a God or something. The union issue, right? They want to stop all these folks from unionizing, and they want to keep these right to work laws and all that stuff. Well, those right to work laws have been effective. Because right to work is a play on anti-union, right? Because if you're a member of a union, you still have a right to work. You know, they play on as well, you got a right, you ain't got to pay dues and all that stuff. You can just come in and work. Yeah, and get treated like paid slaves. Where instead of having conversations, because unions, for those of you who may not understand the value of unions, unions are the reason why you have Saturdays and Sundays off. Unions are the reason why you don't have to go to work at the age of 13, right? Unions are the reason why you're able to work 8-hour shifts as opposed to 12 or 15. Now there's a trend for people to work 12 hours, but they're not working 5 days a week. They might work 3 days, be off a couple, then come back and work. Nonetheless, it's unions. The reason why workers have certain benefits is because of unions. And now it's hard to get people to start unions back up again because corporations are allowed to break the law and have no consequences. Labor Relations Board is supposed to go in and make sure that companies are not telling employees that if you vote for this union, then we will cut off your benefits. Like if you work at a car company, you won't be able to get a discount on a lease or a loan. If you work, say, at Amazon, you won't get 10% off for Amazon goods that other people are paying full price for. You know, you get a better benefit working for Amazon than you do with Amazon Prime, right? But that wouldn't happen if you decide to have a union. That's illegal. They're not supposed to do that, let alone say they're going to do it, right? Saying they're going to do it is illegal in itself, but then to actually do it, that's also illegal. If the reason is because the workers are unionized. Now, that gives you some latitude that, you know, finances, this, that, other. We're not doing business like we used to do. We might have to cut some benefits. Eh, okay. But if it's directly because these folks decided to have a union, that's against the law. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like there's any repercussions for that other than maybe a fine. Maybe. But it is against the law. So if you're working somewhere and they're talking about unionizing and one of your middle managers, whether they say it or put it in writing, they would be really bold to put it in writing. And some have done that. But usually the tactic is they'll say, oh, we need to have a meeting. And the middle manager comes in and basically gives the company spiel about benefits you will lose and all that if you decide to vote for a union. It's up to you whether you want to do it or not. But because there's two phases, you have to vote to have the election, and then you have to actually vote to have the union, right? So that gives companies double cracks at breaking the law, basically. And they're allowed to get away with it, because the National Labor Relations Board does not penalize companies who break the law. If that was the case, in France, they penalized Nissan for something they did here in the United States. When the workers in Canton, Mississippi wanted to unionize, the folks were up there saying, yeah, well, you're not going to be able to lease that car at that interest rate that we've been doing. Won't have first dibs on stuff. Well, in the United States, that's illegal, but the Labor Relations Board never did anything, and the union lost. It's a lot closer than people thought, but they lost. But in France, because the company that owns Nissan, Renault, right, is partially owned by the government, they called in the CEO of the Nissan division and said, hey, what's this we hear about Canton, Mississippi, and your folks were telling people that they would lose benefits if they joined a union? And, you know, they basically got rid of that guy. Now, this is the same guy that was down with changing the state flag to move to Mississippi, but when it comes to unions, he's not that progressive. Nonetheless. You know, here's another interesting stat. People believe 40% of Americans are military veterans. Now, that's astonishing. That would make us like an incredible army ever. I mean, we have military power because we have technology, not just manpower. But 40%? The actual number is 6. Only 6% of the American population identifies or states that they served in the military. They're a veteran. And this is even after we had the longest war in American history, being in Afghanistan. I think we were there for like 12 years until we finally got out during the Biden administration. Only 6. And yet, and still, with 6% of the population, we don't have the resources to make sure that every veteran has a home, every veteran has adequate to outstanding, let me get the adequate word out, outstanding health care. These men and women who served our country, who literally got shot at and shot other people, these people that dealt with burn pits and drinking water, at contaminated drinking water at their training stations. 6% of the population, and we can't take care of them. We can't make sure that they have everything they need. Really? We can't make sure that they can go to any school they want? Really? 6% of the population, we can't handle that. We just bailed out a bank that lost $209 million. Well, we didn't bail them out. We guaranteed that people would keep their accounts, right? That people would be able to get their money. And a bank that lost $209 billion. But we can't make sure that every veteran is not homeless. I mean, you know, these are the things that we have to really, really look at when this rhetoric comes out. Because the rhetoric is based off of fear and misconception. The rhetoric is based off of you as an American citizen not knowing the facts enough where they can trick you into believing that there are problems where there aren't no problems and there are solutions where there's no need for a solution. Right? That's why we need to engage with each other a little better. That's why we need to pay attention and be sensitive to what other people say. Because it's like, if you just rely on the news, especially one particular outlet that claims to be news, let alone the other two that are trying to compete with them for Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis' attention, you'll be scared. I understand why people, if people think that 21% of Americans are transgender, well, I can understand why people are having trepidations about that. And it's really only 1%. That number may grow over time. It may not. It's up to people based on how they feel or how they were born, what's inside of them to make that decision to be their true self, right? It's an individual decision, one way or the other. Because there's people that will say, well, you know, I couldn't help it, blah, blah. If you feel, because people in the gay community had to make this decision a long time ago, right? There were people that understood that they were gay or lesbian or whatever, but they chose to put up a facade, if you will, that they were heterosexual in order to make sure that they could live a lifestyle without prejudice, without pain. Code switching is what we call it now, right? Like when black people show up at a job and they try not to act like they would act at the crib, right? That's code switching, you know, or even anybody else, Asian, Latino. I mean, it's kind of hard when you look at certain people as like, well, you are who you are, right? But you're trying in this code switching mindset, you're trying to get the response like in Spike Lee's movie when Mookie asked the son of the pizza place, but don't you like Prince? And the son, John Turturro's character was like, yeah, but he's different. That's when people are code switching. That's what they're trying to get that response. Well, that black person, that Latino, they're different. They don't fit the stereotype, the misconception, what we're afraid of. They don't fall in that category. Right? That's how powerful misconception and fear is. That's why for those of us who are Christian, we're taught that there's not a spirit, you don't have a spirit of filled fear naturally in you. Right? you have a spirit of power. It's actually the actual power to raise Jesus Christ from the dead, right? That's what we're taught. That's what we believe, supposedly. That's what we're supposed to believe. That we don't have this spirit of fear, but yet amongst people who claim to be diehard Christians, people that claim to be evangelical Christians, all of their politics, all of their decisions and social surroundings are based off fear and misconceptions. The very thing that is not supposed to be dwelling within you. Right? It's all about fear. It's all about misconception. And from my grandma and granddad's point of view, lying. I can lie to you, you believe it, okay. Then that becomes your truth, because I know it's a lie. That becomes your truth, because you believe the lie. It's not on me, because I know I'm lying. It's on you, and it's your truth, and that's what you're sticking to. People know. Don't get it twisted. People that are in politics know about fear and misconceptions. They may be part of the group that had a lot of misconceptions about certain things, especially nowadays with a lot of these folks that are coming in at the state level, you know, in the legislature and all that. They might be part of these people that are misconceived, right? Misinformed. But I was always taught when you know better, you do better. So if you know that the actual black population is not 41%, it's only 12, right? Then maybe you won't look at us as boogeymen that's trying to take over your life and your well-being and all your social importance. I don't know. I mean, we're a pretty solid group for only 12% to be able to have a black person be president, to have a black person be vice president, to have 58 members of Congress. Well, 60, actually. Because California is 12% of the nation's population. That gives them 53 members of Congress and two senators. Gives them 55 electoral votes. If black people were a state based off of our congressional representation, we'd have 60 electoral votes. Based on the numbers of members of Congress we have, 60. So, yeah, 12%, we're doing pretty good. But we could do better if people let us live our lives. Stop trying to take away our rights to vote, our right to have decent housing, our right to have decent health care, and basically our right to live. If we could just stop people from doing that to us, we'd be okay, even at 12%. But because the perception is 41, oh, we got to tamp that down. We got to take some of these folks out. It's almost like a mindset like with alligator or deer control, beaver control. The reason why you can hunt in certain states those animals is because they become a nuisance. If we feel that the population is too big, you can take them out. And that's, I believe, the mentality of some of these people when they feel they can do whatever they want to do to black lives. Oh, Fleming, there you go, that hyperbole again. I'm just saying. Until you show me otherwise, because I can't read minds. I sure as hell can't read people's hearts. But I can look at your actions. And even with all this stuff with George Floyd, even with the movie out about Emmett Till, all these things, the Breonna Taylor, all these things that keep popping up to remind you of how screwed up police actions are in the United States, you still have police officers doing the same damn thing. That's a mindset. They're basing it off of misconception and a fear. Their situation is totally different than what happened in Minnesota. How? It's not. It's a black life. And if the nation rose up one summer to say black lives matter, then instead of trying to say blue lives matter, or all lives matter, you say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, I understand. That's all you have to do. But because you have these misconceptions, because you have these fears, you feel you have to fix it. Same with the LGBTQ community, same with feeling you got to do all this evangelizing. I mean, it is what it is, man. Stop living your life existence based off fear, misconceptions, and lies. At least from my vantage point doing this political podcast, at least let your politics be governed by facts. Please. Until next time.